Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouke Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers in banking. And today, this morning, I'm going to kick off with Jouke again. Good to see you, Jouke.
Yeah, good morning, Tim. That was a night last night, right?
That was quite a night.
I think you've got this nice dark brown sound.
Yeah.
We have to confess to everybody, we had a nice Christmas party, and we feel in optimal shape to run this episode.
We figured out in the agenda that we were doing a recording this morning.
Yes, wonderful.
Nevertheless.
There we go.
We're going to get into it.
Yeah.
So the context of this podcast is the predictions report that we shared last week.
Yeah.
So basically, we looked at all of our senior leaders that are in the field day in, day out, and we started doing a bit of a benchmark on, hey, what is your outlook for 2025? Mm-hmm. What are the major topics? What are the buckets where we see a lot of desire for education in the industry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, we feel, hey, we're just going to share our view and then let's compare notes. In doing so, we have six predictions, and in the coming, let's say, 30 minutes, we're going to take 5 minutes each, 5 to 10, and just walk through, unpack them.
Yeah.
So the first one we're going to start with is prediction number one, the rise of AI-driven recommendation engines. And maybe to set the stage a little bit, that to me relates to AI has already been around for a few decades, and recommendations being fueled by AI is actually nothing new.
No.
So how do we see that for 2025 changing substantially?
I think it's mostly a growth story. Like you have all the data, right, in the mobile app. So and I think people, like, there's been predictive analytics and all of that stuff. But like, how do we really capture the data, and then how do we utilize it to help the customer, to advise the customer, but also to sell more? I think that's the heart of it. And I think now with customer data platforms, with the rise of not only predictive AI but also agentic AI to drive campaigns. That's going to probably have quite some impact in the coming years. I think maybe we have to separate. I think people are a little bit tired of the hyper-personalization story.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but there's so much, let's say, so much talk and so little. I think for the people also in the audience, how often do you really receive something that is truly relevant from your bank? I think they do a lot of segmentation. They do a lot of work, but do you ever notice, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the real frontier. Hopefully in the next 5 years, the technologies come to a point where we truly aggregate all the meaningful data. And that's not only banking data, but also behavioral data, ecosystem data. And then from there, it becomes more intelligent.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
It's one of those classic examples where, let's say I'm a banking customer and I'm in a segment, where actually Thomas in one of the other episodes shared that he actually had an insurance with the bank that he banks with.
Yeah.
And they were still advertising that particular product to him. He already had the product.
Yeah.
So that once more alludes to the point that bringing everything together and really orchestrating for the segment of one.
Yeah.
That's where this prediction goes towards, that these recommendation engines really become meaningful.
Yeah. Now, I think that example with the insurer, probably it's a bank and they have a third-party insurance product. It's in a different back-end system. So
Most likely,
there's no, and you see the same things with all these different back-end systems. So therefore, I think like the foundational pieces, if we really talk about achieving this, is ultimately at infrastructure level, a customer data platform, the CDP. The CDP is critical because there, regardless of the backend, that is where you can then actually really identify this is Tim, and Tim, regardless of whatever information we have in whatever backend, we can get that holistic data view, right? And so kind of I think the data plumbing, the data integration, the data ingestion is, we all know it's nothing new, but like that's the hard work that needs to be put in place. I think then on top of that, like of course, the predictive models, but even very simple rule-based. You know, there's also a lot of talk about super intelligent AI, but if you have the data right, already with very simple rules, you can do a lot.
You can make good progress.
Yeah, so I think really it's kind of get that data architecture clean and then start to experiment both with rule-based as well as with more intelligent forms of matchmaking and predictions.
Yeah. That brings us to the second prediction. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned it just now.
the emergence of agentic AI. This is really the big topic over the past few months.
Yeah.
What's the view?
Yeah, I think in my mind, I think this AI story is evolving. The way I'm interpreting it, the last 2 years, we saw really the rise of large language models. Of course, Mega. And you also realize, like, there's only a few companies in the world that, you know, actually can make the investment to make those models, right? Yeah. Let's be real about it. It became popular with a single prompting approach. So every human being, we know how to prompt it. I think the agentic part is really the interesting second episode of this ever-evolving AI trend. And that is the idea of having workflows around the large language models, giving them multiple instructions, combining it with data and data access, combining it with access to business logic. So now we start to see an orchestration, a new programming model, where you start to kind of get the combination of traditional business logic, data, and the power that is inside these large language models, and you basically start to orchestrate how they're going to collaborate.
Yeah.
And that is super powerful. So I think what it's going to do, in my mind, I think this is going to be a little bit like electricity. We now have this superpower. We have these super intelligent models. We can now combine them, we can orchestrate them, we can instruct them. So if you compare it with electricity, we can now make radios, we can make computers, we can do all these different things. And I think that's the agentic trend, that for everything in banking, every aspect we have, every knowledge worker we have within a bank, there's no doubt that people will start to innovate and create agents to complement these knowledge workers, or to a degree replace the work they do.
Yeah.
And that's pretty profound if you kind of extrapolate that over a period of 10 years.
Yeah. So recently with Chris Cheyenne, our head of AI, we had the same discussion.
Yeah.
And he made a very nice clear statement, mm-hmm. that so far we've built platforms that effectively are automation.
Yeah.
We have business capabilities, microservices, they are deterministic, they always give you the same output.
Yeah.
They just do what you tell them to do.
Quite important.
Very important. You need to have that in place. But the unlock now with agentic AI, yeah. is that on top of that,
yeah.
you can basically have an agentic architecture,
yeah.
Which is the intelligence plus the automation combined. And the, yeah. agents are essentially literally knowledge workers on their own. They're like employees almost.
Yeah.
The way,
yeah.
you can look at them, the way you can think about,
absolutely.
The concept.
Yeah. How you onboard them, how you train, yeah. them, then how do you put them to work. Yeah,
correct.
For sure. Yeah.
Now, that still seemed like a bit of a utopian discussion, like really cool. It's a bit, very fresh. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, there was a stat released this week by Bain,
yeah. Yeah.
Which I believe you also shared on your LinkedIn,
mm-hmm.
That at this moment in time, 59% of all the banks are actively piloting replacing customer service agents with actual,
yeah.
agents, like,
yeah.
AI agents.
Yeah.
And secondarily, I think that's really the, whoa, really? 56% of those banks are similarly going to apply that to coding.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think if you look at kind of the, so for sure, call centers, language-oriented, knowledge-based, no-brainer. Same with software development. So we also see it now in Backbase, like the way every aspect of the software development cycle will be heavily accelerated. So that is from use case analysis to creating the wireframes, the Figmas, translating that into the front-end code, connecting that to the back-end, creating the data sets for QA, the deployment. I think every aspect of software development will become multiple factors more efficient. So that's very interesting, because especially now, if you have the platforms in place, look at how much you can do. But in my mind, I think there's a lot of subsectors in banking that will be impacted. Software, for sure, software development is one.
Yeah.
It will also have a mega impact of how we can do progressive modernization. Because with agents, we can now analyze legacy applications. We can not only legacy core systems, but also legacy channel applications. We can decompose them. We can transform them into suggestions on how to simplify these journeys and implement them on an omnichannel platform. So we basically can eliminate all the silos, right? The story about the data, growth agents that will basically help us, the marketing teams, the sales teams, the relationship managers, to drive and activate the customer base, drive adoption, drive the number of product holdings, basically customer lifetime value. Huge domain.
Yeah.
Another domain is basically any caseworker. That could be a loan officer, a risk officer, basically everything where you today have case management. and workflows. Like in every aspect, I think we're going to see agents that will kind of little steps, ultimately to bigger steps, that will look to basically automate and yeah, some of the human judgment call into autonomic or semi-autonomic agents that will act on our behalf.
Yeah. I would also add that the final part that really makes a difference here is multi-agent contexts.
Yeah.
So agent one can work with agent two, three, four, five, whatever, dependent on how the agent basically needs to solve for the for the responsibility that they have. I think that's interesting because then you get that whole intelligence layer actively working together to get the right information from the underlying platform.
Yeah.
I think especially there it's like a revitalization of the transformational effort you have to do. So over the past decade, you would basically integrate end-to-end use cases and there would be journeys, rather static to a degree.
Yeah.
Right now, if you really apply this thinking, at least conceptually, it's a very dynamic solution to whatever a typical employee would do in a given day. I think that's really exciting for 2020.
You know, Tim, this is huge, right? And I think we're all kind of trying as human beings to figure out like we're trying to make strategies or theories about how this thing is going to evolve. But like this whole multi-agent world, like ultimately everything in the bank or maybe even everything in society is kind of a level of how agents are collaborating, coordinating. I'm interested also to see how these agents have to figure out how you communicate with each other. Is there a standardization? Is there an API? I'm really interested to see how that's gonna play out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a prediction, right?
Yeah, it's so a let's prediction.
See. We're gonna see.
Indeed.
It. All right, moving on. Yeah. Number three, the global expansion of open finance and open banking in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you look at the different, let's say, data points, you do see that there's more uptake of transactions that are done through open banking capabilities, so through PSD2, PSD3 types of contexts.
Yeah.
So you do see an uptake of those rails actually being leveraged.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I also see banks that are still, let's say, a little bit on the back foot. They just do it because there's a regulatory responsibility, but they're not actively, let's say, participating as much. Do you feel that's going to change in 2025?
Well, I think like everything with open banking or open finance, I think there was always kind of the two sides to it. The fact that you need to provide data, the part that typically banks don't really like. It's just a compliancy thing, it's a headache, and you basically feel that you're going to give a lot of valuable capabilities and data to potential competitors. So I think that's kind of the providing side, the supply side. The more exciting part, of course, is on the consumption side, where you now say, like, just like other fintechs, also banks can take an advantage that there's a more open ecosystem. And I think with open finance, it's not just the banks are opening up, but it's the larger fintech ecosystem with all the different fintech capabilities available via APIs. That consumption side, I think that is the big opportunity. And it will continue to become bigger and bigger because I think ultimately banks or financial institutions become more and more curators or aggregators of value within the financial services domain or even beyond with super apps. So the fact that you can now aggregate and that you can compose dynamic services to end customers, basically you can create unique value propositions, I think that's a big opportunity. So I think I also would encourage people like don't think just in the traditional sense of financial services, but especially also with some of the neo challengers, I think it's interesting to start to look at more holistic or even beyond banking type of value propositions.
Yeah.
And that is possible, of course, with this open finance infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, there's more uptake. So one data point to share here is that from Juniper Research, they basically state that open banking payments are predicted to surpass $330 billion globally by 27, up from 57 in 23.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a proper uptake now in actual transactions going through that model, perhaps also in part to the early movers who are basically having that consumption.
Yeah, cool.
Moving on to the fourth one, the arrival of industry integration platforms as a service.
Yeah, so I think we this is actually very much related with open finance, right? It's kind of about the fact that how do we kind of aggregate all these different capabilities, internal capabilities, backend capabilities, fintech capabilities. So the notion is IPaaS means integration platform as a service. I think Roland Boyens said it quite well, right? Integration effort is more than 60% of typical IT projects. I think the vast majority of the legacy systems we need to maintain is mostly system integration stuff, where we had to kind of glue a lot of stuff together. So I think it's interesting to see that we are kind of offloading most of that integration work from bespoke integration into a more industrialized factory where integration platforms basically provided integration as a service. So what this means for the banks is that you can basically now offload the integration effort, not only the initial integration effort, but also the maintenance and keeping these integrations up to date. You can basically offload that to these integration platforms, and you can just create value on top of it. I think that's a very interesting separation of concern, where you can really focus on the value and someone else will take care of the integration burden.
Yeah. Perhaps it's obvious, but this one really underlines all the predictions we shared so far. Because if you have this one in place appropriately, you can basically unlock the AI opportunity, the agentic opportunity.
The data opportunity, the data ingestion, it's critical. So I think like the more you think about an agentic future or a composable future or an aggregation role, you need to be very agile and very nimble in actually what is happening at the business logic layer and at the engagement layer. But below that, you need to have basically composable business logic, event-driven architecture, and integration and data unification. Those are roughly the main, let's say, almost like no-regret moves you can make. Mm-hmm. And I think like if you kind of combine all of this, like people always would say like, why would I change? Why change? Right? Why would I modernize? Or a lot of people actually say like, okay, we can just kick the can down the road because everything works.
Why now?
But yeah, why now? The why now, the why change now is becoming, I think, more and more urgent. Because are you going to, you know, survive, or are you going to have a sustainable business model if you continue to work in these legacy applications, right? Are we going to retrofit AI inside that world, right? To be seen. Yeah. But I mean, I think the good thing is that ultimately this correlates also with what we discussed about agentic AI, that the legacy cleanup or the modernization or the switching cost into a cleaner, more platform-based operating model. I think AI and especially coding agents will also, for a large degree, help accelerate that. Yeah. So I think the switching cost will become lower, which is very good news.
That is very good news.
Yeah.
Now, in this prediction, we claim industry IPaaS, a vertical IPaaS.
Yeah.
Why is that so important to us?
Because a lot of integration platforms, I think more and more integrations have to be thematic, right? Because you need to have a logical cluster of integration. So we see it, for instance, in the workspace that people have to integrate with all the different HR systems and all the different CRM systems. So you clearly see with these integration platforms that they become more vertically oriented to your point, that you have the usual suspects of the usual back-end system categories brought together in a single platform. I think what Backblaze is doing to say like, hey, you can do this in office automation, but you can also do this in the vertical context of a bank. And that's kind of the usual categories are payments, core banking, KYC, AML, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's acceleration within a vertical.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and the other part is also the unified APIs and the unified data model, which in the banking context is absolutely critical.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're going to reinvent the wheel yourself, which others have luckily already done for us, for the industry.
Yeah.
So I would.
You spoke with Hans Tesla, right?
Yeah, Hans Tesla.
That story.
Yeah, the executive director of Bayan, who literally, if you go to the Bayan website, you're going to find all the domain models there that are just like they're hardened. Like,
yeah.
They're production grade quality. There's dozens of banks running with that, let's say, agreement on how we specify our APIs and our contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think also there the vertical IPaaS story is not just, we have a few pre-integrations already available because we know there's a core integration, we know there's an AML integration, but it's also the actual upstream instructions of how the APIs actually communicate,
mm-hmm.
meaning you really standardize it on something that's for the full industry standardized, which I feel is...
So in that way, kind of bringing it together in a single domain model, all these underlying systems might have a different domain model. Normally you have to kind of all these kind of point-to-point solutions, but now you go to a single domain model and then it kind of abstracts all the other underlying differences away.
It's not to be underestimated.
No. Clear.
Hence, I wanted to add this.
Nice addition. Thank you.
Then we go to number five,
The
expanded differentiation of servicing models. So why is it so important to move beyond just having a retail app or just having a small medium business app, for instance?
Yeah, it's a mouthful, right? Differentiating servicing models. Maybe we should reflect a little bit. Differentiating service models. I think the core idea here is that as a bank, you service different customer segments with also a different, let's say, profitability profile or value profile, so to say, right? So with certain customer segments, you would like to make sure that your cost to service are at the lowest level possible. That also typically relates in a consumer context, like virtually no human intervention at all. Everything is automated. Versus in other parts of the bank with other customer segments like mass affluent or high net worth individuals or commercial banking customers, you actually see a very different profitability profile and value profile. Hence, there's also typically more human assist involved, like a relationship manager, an advisor, etc. So what is kind of nice to see is that actually as a bank, because you are servicing multiple client segments with different profitability profiles, you would like to have the possibility to kind of balance out or optimize the balance between self-directed and the human assist and the relationship manager. So if you really think about it, the best way to do that is to have all these different stakeholders operate on one platform. Or, you know, one platform even with agentic AI where you can actually orchestrate it as one, right? And then in the context to the customer will get a tailored value proposition. So today, most of the banking stuff, I would say, is a one-size-fits-all app, just transactional, you know, you do the basic servicing. I think moving forward, these application experiences will be way more tailored towards specific segments. So there's a composable app. You can take different products, different capabilities, and the app will be dynamically assembled based on the customer segment. Within that assembly, you can also then decide, like, how is this customer going to interact with the human capacity I have and with the agentic capabilities I have, right? In some cases, they can directly phone and WhatsApp or message with the relationship manager and the advisor. In other cases, you don't, right? So you can now really nicely orchestrate the different of levels of engagement, the different levels of communication, the different levels of assist, AI assist, human assist per client segment. Yeah. Creating the right mix of white glove treatment with the right cost levels, with the right economics for profitability.
We discussed it a few times also as right channeling.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a nice way of saying it, yeah. I think right channeling in a way is also maybe a little bit, let's say, simplified or old school, like, hey, we're going to route you to the right
channel,
right?
Yeah, fair enough.
I think in a way, I think we definitely will go far beyond kind of the whole notion of a channel. A channel is, I think, a very outdated push model where we just have channels and we push stuff to clients. I really think we have to go and we are going into a model where everything is pull. The customers in control, the agents and the platforms are coordinating. And I think it is all about assembling the right capabilities and the right value to the customer. And now more than ever, we are in a reality that we can make those compositions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Clear. We go to the last one, Jouk. Number six, the increasing momentum of neobank challengers.
Yeah.
Let me start with the CAGR of specifically this group of players, which is 54.8% until 2030.
Wow.
That's an expectation number.
Yeah.
Massive growth potential at the very least.
Yeah.
What do we see in the industry? We talk about Revolut quite often, given that they are very bold and out there with the data that they have in terms of onboarding a million customers per month, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Making the bold claim, we have no competition, right?
Yeah.
Do we recognize this as well in the boardrooms that we speak to? Do they similarly feel the urge or the sense of urgency when these players are now entering?
I think the whole neobank thing went through this kind of Gartner hype cycle where, you know, people were in the early days very significantly concerned about it. Most bankers were very concerned about the neobank initiatives or even saw it as an opportunity. I think it went through the slope of disillusion, and we're basically kind of arrived at a point where people are a little bit in denial. I don't think they take it too serious at this moment, and I think they should, because you really see that they're now kind of in that uptake through the slope, and they are. So my view on this is that it is a serious threat. It is a very, very serious threat, because platforms will always win, ultimately. We've seen it with Uber, we've seen it with Netflix, we've seen it with all the major non-banking platforms. And what these platforms do, they have a compounding impact. And I think most of the fintechs, and the neo-challengers is also a little bit of like a winner-takes-it-all type of approach. So I'm not talking about small neobanks. I think that will not survive, irrelevant. But the major platforms, and it also, I would say, includes people like the Cash App from Square and Block. It also includes platforms like PayPal. It includes Nu. So there's a whole bunch of these platforms. Let's not even go to China or Asia, like all the platforms over there. But platforms are not to be underestimated in the compounding impact they have. So what is very interesting, these challenger banks, they typically started as monolines. So we were talking about unbundling banking and basically every aspect of banking. So that was, I think, their entry play to kind of get into the game. It was, it's just payments, you're not going to make any money with it. But I think today these platforms are at the level that they start to rebundle and they're basically expanding their service portfolio and product portfolio, and they're becoming super apps. So I think they ultimately will go after every aspect of financial services, and ultimately they will become, and they are already today, super apps that will help you with your life.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the macro trend. I think they are underestimated, and I think they are a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. I would also add that the pace of innovation and the pace of how to enter new markets and bring new value propositions is just second to none compared to the benchmark.
Yeah.
And that is almost exponential, and especially because they are set up fully digital, also their embrace of the agentic AI wave and everything we discussed so far, their embrace is almost instant. Like it's actually easy for them to ride the wave even faster.
Yeah, I think there's you can call it a cultural difference, you can call it, but in any regulated industry, you see a larger group of people that will have to take care of the responsibility of the bank, right? And that is always slowing down innovation. You get more meetings, you get more alignment. So I'm very much in favor, of course, running a safe bank and doing that in a responsible way. But it kind of, in a negative way, I think it correlates with the level of ambition, the level of let's say, experimentation. And I'm not talking about little innovation labs. I'm talking like real-world innovation in the core of the business. And I think that's kind of what these challenger banks have a major advantage culturally. You know, they had to grow up to do the regulation part, but they bring that agility and that speed. Where I think banks on the other round, they have the size, they have the install base, etc., but they are not the fastest, so to say. So I think it's really going to compete at speed there, which I think is I would put my bets and cards on the challengers culturally and dynamic execution. Yes.
To be seen.
To be seen.
To be followed.
Yes.
All right, those are the six predictions, everyone.
Yep.
I hope it was helpful to get a bit of a highlight. The report is also out. You can download it. You can look into the details there. Just to wrap up, share some key takeaways. Prediction number one, banks need to harness AI-driven recommendation engines to truly help the end user be more successful in their daily lives, in their banking applications, basically better experiences. Prediction number two, banks need to act now, using agentic AI to boost productivity and still deliver white glove customer experiences. Mm-hmm. We talked about multi-agents even over time. That's really the next breakthrough. The third one was about embracing open finance, embedded finance, basically leveraging the ecosystem and be a player within that ecosystem. The fourth one, we spoke quite at length on vertical integration platform as a service, where we feel that that's the entry point to really bring all the data and all the power together that you have as an institution. The fifth one is about tailored value propositions and really delivering experiences at the right moment in time, at the right touch point, at the right unit economics. And how do you orchestrate all of these different elements in the mix appropriately? And we just wrapped up with the neobanks being serious in the coming few years when it comes to land grab, literally being super competitive in our space.
Yep.
Anything to add or highlight further?
No, I think you are always very eloquent, Tim, in summarizing these topics. It's all good. I just realized there's a kind of a common thread between most of these trends, but I really think like it's the how do you bring stuff together? I think that's kind of if I look at like the open finance, the agentic, it is kind of aggregating, curating, orchestrating. And I think it's kind of interesting to see that we go beyond kind of the, let's say, to your point, these standard CRUD applications where things are predefined in business logic, we'll keep that. But now on top of it, we're going to see that whole agentic movement. I think the agentic part is probably going to be one of the biggest game changers in the industry, if not in the world.
Yeah. It's a very exciting time to be alive.
Let's see.
Cool. Looking forward to next year. Thanks, Jouk.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.